Welcome. I'm glad you're tuning in to our PSN podcast. We don't have a name for these episodes just yet. I think listening to a podcast is sometimes easier for us as we move or maneuver through our busy lives. I'm your host, Shantae, and today we're talking with Liz Petruzzi. She's going to share with us about a manual she created for her son, Joey. As Liz puts it, if you were zapped off the planet tomorrow, who is going to trim your child's toenails or buy their birthday balloons? It's not fun to think about, but it is extremely important. What do others need to know about your child? Where can the information easily be found? Liz shared with us recently about three things she did right parenting a child with special needs, and three things she thinks she didn't do right. I thought it was pretty fascinating and that we could all learn from her. One thing she mentions in the article is this manual she created all about her son. I do hope that you guys will check out the article and read it. I will include the links below this post to her blog as well as to the article. I wanted Liz to tell us more about the All Things About Joe manual that she produced. I think since we're talking about planning this issue, it would be extremely helpful to hear how she did it and what steps she took to put it together. So thanks, Liz, for sharing with us.
Hello, I'm Liz Petruzzi, and my son is Joey. He's 28 years old. He has a diagnosis of Rubenstein-Tibby syndrome and a secondary diagnosis of autism, which I don't really like to talk in terms of label, but I know that's what people want to know. We have some interesting behavior issues as well, and he is nonverbal. So that's one of the reasons that it was important to me to be very thorough in planning, because he is not able to easily communicate with people his life and what he needs. So, so I'll start with what prompted me. About 10 years ago, I had a neighbor across the street whose husband went into the hospital and subsequently died, and she had Alzheimer's, pretty advanced stages. He was her caregiver. And so until the nephew could come down, I was assisting them with her medication and making sure she ate and some caretaking things. And so then once the nephew arrived, I helped him, attempted to help him locate some of the things he needed just to settle his estate. And it literally took us weeks to find things like the car title, the car insurance, the bank statements. They were in all different places. And the wife couldn't help us because she had advanced Alzheimer's. So it really made me aware of how important it is to have everything put in one place. So that was kind of the beginning of all of this.
Do you want to go into how you started? Like what would you do, or what's...
Well, I started, the way I started was if I was suddenly zapped off the planet
I love that.
In a day, what would people need to know about my son, like his food preferences and how he likes his shoes tied and just everything, clothes sizes and where we get his clothes, because like one of the things is he is not able to do a button zip in a timely enough fashion when he needs to use the bathroom. So he uses elastic waist pants and shorts, but he is in men's sizes, so that can be challenging to find. So those are some of the things. So it was just kind of this process of what do people know? What do they need to know so that he's comfortable, so that he has what he needs, since he's not gonna be able to communicate and he's going to get upset and frustrated when they don't understand.
Okay, so I wanted you to show us how you put together this manual.
Okay.
And let me see, and teach us like what you did and how we should do it. And I don't know if we can get to all of it, but maybe we can send and provide links, you know, of steps for them to take.
Right.
To start.
Well, I mean, the first thing I did was I basically started just gathering all the information. So like his birth certificate, his social security card, his medical records, you know, anything that pertained to him, and just have it in one place. So it's in a binder that's kept in our safe. My dad has the code to the safe, and also our attorney, our estate planning attorney, has that as well. So we have two binders. One is all of our information, like our bank statements, our credit card statements, our insurance, the car titles, like all the important papers, instead of being in like 50 files are in just one place. And so I'll update that, you know, as current things come in, I'll put the current thing in and pitch the old thing. I try to have stuff that's at least, you know, not older than 6 months old. Mm-hmm. So I'll do that. So instead of having a filing cabinet, it actually was good as far as like consolidating things as well, because instead of having a filing cabinet, I now have a binder that has all the important papers in it. So that's ours. And then Joe's has just, you know, it has his passport, it has his medical records, his blood work, anything that's important to him, which is separate from the All Things Joey manual. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way that I would suggest putting that together is just picturing, like, if somebody had to step into your life for a month with your child, with no instructions from the child, and just everything that they would need to know. So I started out with just a picture of him on the front and just a quote that really I feel conveys our mindset. It's from Temple Grandin. Do you want me to read it?
Sure.
It says, "I find great meaning and value in my life, and I have no wish to be cured of being myself. If you would help me, don't try to change me to fit your world. Don't try to confine me to some tiny part of the world you can change to fit me. Grant me the dignity of meeting me on my own terms. Recognize that we are equally alien to each other, that my ways of being are not merely damaged versions of yours. Question your assumption, define your terms, work with me to build more bridges between us." And that's from Temple Grandin. So I started out with just his picture and that quote because that's important to me. Hopefully it conveys the idea that, you know, he is the perfect Joe, and it's not about him fitting some definition that somebody else feels, but just about helping him do his thing in life. Which is what this is about. So then I did a sheet that was just a basics. It's an overview. It has his date of birth, his social security, his Medicaid ID. I have where the disabled parking permits are. People may not think of those things, but they're important. His support coordinator, his doctors, all the information about his doctors, his medication. I just kind of went over the basic information of just what people would need to know. So I'm thinking like doctors and his support coordinator and his Medicaid ID. So it's just a basic information sheet. So it's doctors, it's his you know, social security number, his Medicaid number, his diagnosis, kind of just the overview of information that people would need to know.
Okay.
I mean, I that's going to be different for everyone, but I'm just thinking like what people need to know to manage his life. And it is overwhelming. His life is overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. I mean, all right, we're going to have to break it down into a little bit. We'll have to break it down into steps, which I'm sure you've already done. How long did it take you to put all of this together?
Well, to do everything, to do our wills, our trust, and all of this, it took me a year.
A year.
Yeah. And it was not fun. And I drank a lot of wine during that process. Because it's not fun to think about these things. It's not fun to think about dying and not being here and what's going to happen when you're not here and who's going to cut his toenails and who's going to buy the balloons for his birthday and, you know, all of that stuff. It is not fun to think about. So it was kind of a start and stop process. I would do some and then I would get overwhelmed and just stop, and then the idea of, okay, what if something happened to me tomorrow? Because you don't know. And my husband is in the fire service, so we see a lot of that where people, it's just, you think to yourself, wow, they didn't know that tomorrow was their last day.
Right.
No,
it's extremely important, and you know, I applaud you for doing it, and that's why I thought it was so important to share, because I think too, what I hope to get across for this is just to start. Like,
yes.
I'm hoping you'll inspire me at the end, that I'll walk away, I'll buy the binder, I'll start the page, I'll do some of the stuff so that I can start the, because I know it's important, but I have not done it yet.
Right. Well, I would say probably the first step, the very first baby step, instead of like all of this, is just to think, well, what do I want my child's life to look like? If I'm not here, what do I want it to look like? And just try to write a letter of intent. So that if you're gone, they know what you want for your daughter. Like, what do you want her life to look like? And write that down. And then just go from there.
Right. No, I think that's good. Now, and I know we're not supposed to really go into this, but I know you talked about it, so I want to hear about it. So you decided not to do guardianship.
Correct.
And what did you
We do? Chose to do power of attorney. For medical, financial, and any placement decisions, which means a support coordinator cannot decide it's in his best interest to go to a group home and say to him, do you want to go to the group home? And he goes, uh-huh. And she goes, okay, that's what he wants. That's what's happening. Not that anyone would do something like that, but they
no,
can.
Of course,
they
right.
can. And so I have control over his medical decisions, his financial, and any placement decisions. And I chose that after I went to a seminar by an attorney, and I'm not even sure if he's still living because he was older. He was with an ARC in Michigan, and he did guardianship for years. Years he was an attorney who did guardianship, and he saw how guardianship fell apart, that these parents would put this together and then they would pass away 10, 15, 20 years later. And even though they had layers, like if this person can't do it, this person will do it. If this person can't do it, this person will do it. By the time they passed away, it all had fallen away and the person became a ward of the state. Because once guardianship is declared, it's not easily undone. So somebody has to take that guardianship. So they would become wards of the state. And he saw how awful it was and how it really didn't work. And so what would happen, and he gave examples, like he saw a van accident with several people from group homes, and everyone got medical attention except the person with guardianship, because they had to wait for the guardian to come, unless it's life or death. If it's life or death, they can treat. But this person had a broken leg, so they had to wait about 10 hours before the guardian could come because they were vacationing in another state.
Oh my gosh.
So they had to get there before they could set the leg because they needed permission to treat. It was not life or death. So he basically painted a picture of how guardianship strips away rights and how people who are declared incompetent have less rights than a prison inmate. They are not allowed to vote. They are not allowed to have decisions. Somebody has to make those decisions. And he basically said that, you know, it really puts them in a very vulnerable position, because if you pass and nobody steps up to take that guardianship, and it's a big responsibility, they have to file papers with the court. There's a lot of things they have to do. If they don't take that, you know, ownership of that role, then the state takes it and they become wards of the state. So that wasn't something that I wanted for him. And I wanted him to have preference and choice. And it makes it much more difficult for people to put those decisions on him if he doesn't have guardianship declared, if he's not declared incompetent. So that was kind of the basis of our choice.
That was very, very enlightening. Thank you. Because I have not heard it that way. So I appreciate hearing it that way.
Yeah.
And so you do not have guardianship. You have power of attorney.
Correct. We have forms in the binder, and we have somebody that is going to take power of attorney. So basically he would have to sign the paper, and part of the rules is it has to be written in language he can understand. And so we've had it written in language that he can understand, and he signs it, someone else signs it, and it's notarized. It can be challenged in court, but we've never had anybody question it. You know, they scan it in at hospitals and doctor's offices because of HIPAA laws. You know, they're not allowed to talk to us unless they have something on record. But we've done that since he's 18. He's 28 now, and we've never had an issue with it.
Going back to the manual, so you said the first thing we would start with would be just...
Just to imagine, to sit with, and we actually sat with different people. We created like a dream team and sat down and just talked with people about, you know, what his life might look like if we passed. And we kind of like just were like, well, what do we want? Because, you know, I don't love the idea of a group home for him just because he is independent. And, you know, I don't love the idea of him having to share a bathroom and being 50 years old and being told he has to go to bed at 8 o'clock at night. I mean, I'm kind of a freedom person, and I want him to have some choice. And I understand why a lot of those group homes, you know, they need to have those kinds of rules and structure. But if he can, you know, be supported in our home, that's what we want to do. So we have services through an agency, respite services, and I talked with the agency owner and she felt like that they would be able to support him in our home if something happened to us. The state only pays for 8 hours of support now. Part of his trust is to fill in the gaps for that. Okay. We talked about...
So he would get to stay here?
He would get to stay here.
Would someone move in with him? Or
He would have supports, which means caregivers. And, you know, it would be... We've said it's okay for him to have a roommate. You know, it's just... There is no perfect situation. I mean, that's kind of what I've learned, is that it's never perfect. There are holes in what we've done. It's not going to be perfect. It may not work. I mean, and we have that in there, that if it doesn't work, here's what we would like to see in a placement for him. Because we understand that even though this is what we want for him, it's possible that in reality, he's being supported and it's just not enough for him. So we've said, you know, we want him to be in a place where he would have his own bathroom. We want him to be in a place where he would have some personal choice. We've made some suggestions. We've talked to his support coordinator. I mean, I think communication is the biggest thing. I mean, the woman who owns the agency, who gives us respite services, she has an understanding of what we want for him. And our support coordinator has an understanding of what we want for him. And to a certain extent, you know, you just have to have faith. You have to trust that, you know, there's someone who loves him way more than I do, and that the right things are going to happen. Because as many horror stories as there are great stories. And I've seen people, adults with disabilities, who have no one. Their family has passed on and they've had no one. And yet I've seen them being taken care of. I've seen people step up and care about them and love them. And so, you know, there is a definite big piece of faith in there that he will be taken care of, even if what we've put together fails, because that's definitely a possibility. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's the truth. You know, you just do the best you can, and that's all you can do.
That's all you can do. No, well, you've done a fantastic job. And you didn't have a guide? You just kind of thought of all these things?
Yeah, over time. It wasn't like I sat down and did it in one day. It was, you know, a process over a year. And you know, as you start doing it, you're like, oh, yeah, they need to know this. And, oh, yeah, they need to know that. So, and like things to be aware of in the community, like my son has no depth perception, so he may not see curbs. You have to verbally say, you know, watch your step. You know, look down, look at your feet. Right. And so somebody who doesn't know him wouldn't know that. Right. So it's just kind of, I mean, I guess I just would go through my day and go through different things and go and just think of things that people wouldn't necessarily know automatically. The things, all, like you said, all the little things we do that are just automatic that other people wouldn't even know to do, and just write them down. And like I said, there's probably plenty of things that I forgot and didn't include.
No, but it's a huge start, and that's the thing, I think, is starting.
Well, it's basically just writing a manual about your kid, like all the things that make them unique, and, you know, the things they love, the things that make them laugh, the things that set them off, the things that they need to be happy. And like, even you could even start as simple as, if I was going to send them away for a weekend, what things would they need? What things would they want? What things would I communicate to the person? And you can add to it. It's not like you just do it once. I mean, I update it every January. I try to update it every January, and I'll add to it. I'll remember things. So it's definitely a process. And I think the important thing is just to start with something, because something's better than nothing. If all you have is a list of doctors and phone numbers and medication, that's more helpful than zero.
Right.
So,
Start. I think it's awesome. So I can't thank you enough for sharing with us. You know, and I appreciate your, like I said, the three things you think you did right, and the three things you might not have done so right.
Right. Well, there's more than three, but
yeah, like for all of us, I'm sure. Right. But I appreciated that. I thought it was very insightful. So I'm excited for the readers to.
Well,
read
good.
It and gain some insight. So thank you, and thank you for sharing with us.
I've done the best I can. I will say it's, you know, it's never perfect and it's never done.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Okay, here's an action step for this week. Take a baby step. think, what do I want my child's life to look like if I'm not here? Write a letter of intent so that if someone had to step into your shoes, they would know what you wanted for your child. What do you want his or her life to look like? Write that down. You can also visit Liz's site and grab a copy of the poem from Temple Grandin she used to start her son's manual. And she's also included a sample of her designation for durable power of attorney for medical treatment, residential placement, and program decisions form. It will be on her site, so make sure to take advantage and download the form. I feel like Liz provided us with tremendous insight and really made the point of what if tomorrow is your last day and you are zapped off the planet. What do others need to know about your child? Please take the first baby steps towards writing a letter of intent. I will include a link to help walk you through writing that letter. I know this is not a fun topic, but it is extremely important. Let's be accountability partners. I will share next week what I've gotten accomplished towards starting my child's manual, and you can all leave me notes on what steps you took. I hope that you're all finding this information valuable, and I can't wait to connect with you again next week. Bye for now.